Hey, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning, good morning. So for those of you who are following the sun, remember that spring actually starts in March, not in February, in case you got confused here. No special announcements today, but today's order of service includes announcements of other upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everybody joining in. So everybody, join in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, check our webpage at lcuuc.org. LCUUC, yeah, I said it right. And like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment at this point to silence all electronics that you may have here with you today as we are going to begin our service. Thank you.
Good morning. Whether you're here because worshiping with us is a normal part of your routine, or if this is the very first time you've ever been in a church building, doesn't make any difference. On this morning, we gather to proclaim that we belong to one another and that others belong to us. Broken hearts are welcome here. Anxious spirits are welcome here. Minds whirring faster than a racing engine and uncertain of what to think. Stubborn egos like my own that sometimes trip us up and cement us to opinions. Fragile, shell-shocked souls, they're all welcome here. Yours and mine and everyone else's. Not because this community will fix it through easy solutions or a right way forward. As a liberal religious congregation, we have something far more fragile and far more powerful than that. We have our need to be together, our need to reconnect to the life-giving source that moves within us and among us, our need to make one another a little braver and a little wiser before returning to the service of life. So let us be here together. Come and let us worship. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your nearest neighbor.
At this hour, in small towns and big cities, in single rooms and ornate sanctuaries, many of our sibling Unitarian Universalist congregations are also lighting a flaming chalice. As we light our chalice today, let us remember that we are part of a great community of faith. May this dancing flame inspire us to fill our lives with the Unitarian Universalist ideals of love, justice, and truth. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 298, Wake Now My Senses.
Feel the deep power.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to bring a message containing all the nutrients necessary for a developing mind, including hope and grace and all the fiber you need to get you out and do things. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you come from, you are welcome here. We welcome you for your differences, your weaknesses, and your strengths. Whether you are metaphorically Merino, Suffolk, Rambouillet, Dorper, Corriedale, Cheviot, Katahdin, Texel, Barbados, Hampshire, Romney, Dorset, East Frisian, Shropshire, Polyplay, Wiltshire, Tarkey, Chura, Montedale, Awassi, Wensleydale, Cormo, Shetland, Borula, Icelandic, Bergamasca, Cotswold, Gotland, or Evie, just to name a few variations, you are welcome here. I'm sure I don't have to tell you those are all different types of sheep, except for the last one, which is a Pokemon. As a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about our church. We are glad that you have chosen to be here today to celebrate and worship with us.
That we reach out to our community is by contributing to the local food pantries, both financially and by collecting non-perishables. So if you have brought food items to share, you can bring them forward or you can give them to a child to bring forward. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story with Paul Fackler, our worship associate, who has a bag.
One should always carry a bag. So good morning. Come on, sit down. We'll get to reveal what's in the bag here bit by bit. So today, okay, everybody come up, pull up some carpet. Well, don't actually pull up carpet, put yourself down on the carpet. Today we're going to talk about wolves and sheep and metaphors. So You're going to learn something about metaphors that you may not already know, or you may already have learned this, because I'm sure a lot of you are taking literary criticism already. So I brought some helpers, because I wasn't allowed to bring my actual sheep. So this is Irving Berlin. Irving Berlin is a sheep. And this is not a wolf, as you can see. I mean, most of you would say, is this a wolf? Not a wolf. Not a wolf. It's a dog. So it's a near cousin to a wolf, and that's Ira Gershwin. And then I've also brought a philosophical duck, because you never know when you need somebody to help solve an argument, and ducks are really good at that. I don't know why, but they are. Okay, so what do you guys know about wolves? So you can throw something. They eat sheep. By golly, that is true. They eat sheep. They are called, anybody know? Go ahead. They're predators, yes. And what do we call animals that eat other animals? Besides predators, they're not vegetarians, carnivores. That's right. So wolves are carnivores. And here's a scary picture of a wolf. That's an actual picture of a wolf from the internet. If you're browsing the internet and this pops up, would you like move closer to your monitor and say, good doggy, or would you move away from it? I would move away. So that's kind of a scary picture of a wolf. It's an angry wolf. Yeah, yeah. So, but I didn't want you guys to be afraid of wolves in general, so I brought this picture as well. Now, some of you may recognize that once again, are these wolves? No, they're not, actually. They're huskies. Yep, they're dogs. But they behave just like wolves, and they look a heck of a lot like wolves. So I'm going to cover up the scary wolf with the friendly wolf puppies in your imagination now. All right. So we know that wolves are, they're kind of dangerous. They're predators. They eat sheep. So how do they live socially? Do they use Facebook? What do they do? Wolf book. That's right. They've got a wolf book. They run around in packs. They all have internet connections and run around in packs so they can communicate with each other. So we know they're social. Actually, wolves are very social. They like to live together. They hang out together. So now what do we know about sheep? Sheep. Go ahead.
They say baa.
They say baa. Do they say baa or do they say ma? Or is that a goat?
Both.
Both. Yeah, I'm not sure. Okay, what do sheep eat? Sheep chow? Grass. Grass that's always a little bit further on than where you want them to be. So sheep are herbivores. They eat grasses. And if you had one in your house, it would probably take a shine to your sofa and might try and eat that too. Because they like to root around and find things to chew on. People raise them on farms. What do we raise sheep for? What are sheep good for? Hey, it looks like you've got some sheep-type fur there. What's that? It's not? What?
Mutton.
Mutton. Ah. Yes, for their meat. So we eat them. We name it so we don't know it's sheep, so we call it mutton. So they're like, hey, that's a sheep. What else? They're wool. That's right. Do any of you know how to knit? You haven't had your class? Good. Excellent. So make sure you sign up for your classes to learn how to knit. Sheep give us wool, lots and lots of wool. This sheep is, as you can see, covered in wool. They grow their hair like poodles forever until it's actually sheared off. And so it's actually kind of a nice thing to get a haircut every once in a while for a sheep. Are sheep social, or what do they do? How do they hang out? They hang out with their pack, but they don't call it a pack. They call it a herd. I'm not sure why, but there you go. Flock. There we go. The seagulls are in flocks. No, that's a different thing. Okay, so, and sheep are considered incredibly genius, right? Are they? Are they geniuses? I mean, do they build shelters? Do they take care of themselves perfectly? They don't need any help from anybody? They need help, yeah. So sheep historically have been considered sort of not so smart. I think they get a bad rap. I mean, there's a sort of sheep, and he's obviously very smart. He's out selling mattresses. But most sheep are wandering around. They're getting lost. They have what I would call the dog sense of squirrel, which is, hey, what's that over there? Is it edible? Let me go chew on it. Hey, what's that over there? So they kind of wander around, get lost. They often need a leader, and we call that leader a A sheepdog, that's one that keeps them in order. But sometimes the sheepdog in turn has a leader. Yes, go ahead. A human, right, which we call a shepherd. So are any of you shepherds? No. No. Is our minister a shepherd? Maybe. Let's see. Okay, can you name any stories with wolves in them? 100 points for each story you can name. I got three top ones. Go ahead. Little Red Riding Hood. Oh, you know what? I forgot to bring out my picture of a sheep. This is a sheep. Know what kind of sheep it is? 100 points if you know what kind of sheep that is. It's a big one. It's true. There's the sheep. Its first name would be Mitt if it had run for president. Go ahead. It's a Romney. Romneys are very big sheeps. Sheeps. Sheep, singular. Sheep, also plural. Okay, what did we hear? We heard Little Red Riding Hood. Little Red Riding Hood, 100 points. That was on my top three stories with wolves in them. Is the wolf good or bad in that story?
Bad.
Hungry, yep. Okay, another story with wolves in it. The Boy Who Cried Wolf. Yes, I didn't put that in my top three, though, but I'll give you 100 points anyways. Another story. Three Little Pigs. That's right. I threw that one in my top three, too. Three Little Pigs. Is the wolf good or bad in the Three Little Pigs? Huh? Bad, yes. And he's also sized. He's a big bad wolf. I'm not sure why he's sized as well, but there you go. One more. And this one was recently made into a movie again. It's been made into a movie by Disney. It's been made into a live-action movie. There's wolves in it, but people usually remember bears and snakes and a really big tiger. No, not a tiger. It's a panther. What is it? Go on. The Jungle Book. That's right. The Jungle Book. Who's the kid? Mowgli. And it was written by Rudyard Kipling. So, boy, you guys got them all. So are wolves good or bad in that story? They're good in that story, interestingly. So we're going to ignore that story because it doesn't fit with the rest of our idea here. But it's a good story, and there's reasons why it uses wolves as well. So now let's consider the metaphor. And using what we know about sheep and wolves, we're going to look at it as a metaphor. A metaphor is a figure of speech where we make a comparison or analogy between two things. But the literal meaning doesn't make sense in itself. So our phrase today that we're going to look at and take apart is a wolf in sheep's clothing. So what do you think that means? Okay, take it literally. Take it literally first. You're jumping way ahead. Yep, so it's a wolf dressed up like a sheep. So we see in our cartoon... Yep, go ahead. Yep, so pretty much you go and you get a sheepskin and you cover yourself up in it, and you're actually a wolf, which, as we know, eats sheep, and now you're disguised so you can hang out with the sheep. You can become a member of the herd. And exactly, why would you do that again? Can you repeat that? Because you're now in amongst your food. Yes, you're like, hey, I'm hanging out with my food. So, yeah. So let's think about this. So let's take it back a little bit for you guys here. So do sheep have clothing? Not really. They just are covered in hair. They're wool. And we'll consider that their clothes. So somebody dresses up in that. Now, why would a wolf dress up? Are wolves and sheep friends? We've already said no to that. We know that the wolf is there because he wants to eat the sheep. So now, do wolves actually dress up like sheep?
No.
No. So if this isn't really how sheep and wolves work, I mean, when a wolf hunts a sheep, it doesn't pretend to be a sheep. It just says, hey, there's a sheep. I'm going to jump on it. I'm going to catch it. I'm going to drag it back, and we're going to feed everybody. It'll be a feast tonight. But... So who or what might actually do something like this? Who might behave like a wolf? You would behave like a wolf? Yeah, you would. Well, you guys, there's good bonus points for being that way. But generally speaking, if somebody were behaving like a wolf to you, if you're the sheep, would you consider that a good thing or a bad thing? Yeah. So if somebody who was pretending to be your best friend and turned out not to be, would that be a good thing or a bad thing? Yeah. So when you find somebody who does this, who pretends to be something they're not, in order to take advantage of you, we call that a wolf in sheep's clothing. So there, now you've taken that all apart, and I'm going to send you off to your classes, and you can discuss further whether you want to be wolves when you grow up or be sheep.
And may I have today's lantern bearer? May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day, and if you all would follow our lantern bearer, and if you all would help me sing the children to their classrooms. The song is called For You Shall Go Out, and the words are in your order of service. Far too often in our world, we're forced to confront the really not good things that people can do to each other. And when these things happen, we can still come together in places like this church and churches around the country to remind ourselves that there is hope and there is love. There are good-hearted people who can look into any storm and continue to believe that a calm, bright morning will come. This community is a place where we can keep the embers of hope alive, even when the world seems really intent on raining on that fire. And we can use our little embers to light a beacon for the rest of the world. Our offerings each week sustain this community so that we can help to share that light. Please give generously so that we can all together help spread a little warmth around the world. This morning's offering will now be given and received. Thank you. Thank you for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community and for everything that you do for this community. One of the reasons that we come together in that beloved community each week is to share our laughter and our tears. And we do this in several ways. Before the service, you're always welcome to come up and silently light a candle on the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud, and the worship associate lights our candles for us. So would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand. The ushers will bring you a microphone. And I'd like to light the first candle today, Paul, for my friends Todd and Mary Whitford. Mary is very ill and in a skilled unit, and they just need all the prayers they can get right now.
This is Claire, a candle of joy for my mechanic. Probably a lot of you know what it's like to have a car that just, for whatever reason, needs to be fixed a lot. And when you find the right mechanic, it's just so nice.
This is Patty. Please light a candle for my little grandson, Lennon, here, who was out enjoying the beautiful weather last week and rolled off a piece of play equipment at the park and broke his little arm.
We light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows which have not been spoken aloud here today, but which we hold deeply in our hearts.
Today's first reading is a litany for those who have been abused, and we are going to do it as a responsive reading. The words of the whole litany are in your order of service, so you can follow along. And I'm going to read each paragraph, and then you will answer with the response line, "May we reach out in honesty and love." So let's hear you guys say that. Okay, let's hear you say that with a little more conviction. Thank you. That's good. In the spirit of love, harmony, and remembrance, we stand too often divided, too often set apart from one another in heedless ways. We seek to be compassionate, but our vision may be clouded or distracted. We too often go forward day by day and look without seeing.
May we reach out in honesty and love.
May we work to heal the divisions which separate Earth's children one from another. May we peer through the mists of deception which hide and deny violence, mists enclosing those who suffer. May we not allow the misuse of our fellow souls to hide in broad daylight.
May we reach out in honesty and love.
When we see the afflicted, however they may be afflicted, may we not shrink away. May we not blame suffering on the one who suffers. May we be courageous enough to perceive suffering and compassionate enough to attend to the voice of those who suffer.
May we reach out in honesty and love.
When we see prejudice, when we hear evil speaking, when we witness the rough hand of the scathing world laid upon the helpless or innocent, may we resolve to work toward unity and justice.
May we reach out in honesty and love.
May we not turn away from the wounded head of the abused. May we not accept the twisted reasoning by which the oppressor declares himself the victim.
May we reach out in honesty and love.
Let our gratitude for good fortune in our lives lead us not to complacency, but to awareness. awareness of those whose lives are shadowed by abuse or neglect. May we not ignore signs of deceit or denial that hide brutality.
May we reach out in honesty and love.
In all things, may those who suffer ever be able to approach us, find a kindly ear and supporting hand. May we witness for love and justice at every level of relationship. May we nurture a keen eye and a strong and loving heart for any who fear the hurtful rod, the cutting voice, the uneven hand, the chain of oppression, great or small.
May we reach out in honesty and love. Amen.
Amen. Here ends the first reading.
Today's meditation is a spoken meditation, which I don't tend to do often, but this one really spoke to me. And as we begin, I ask that you think about the fact that you are a survivor. As of this morning, you have a 100% track record of making it, one day at a time. No matter where you've been in your life, you are a survivor. The meditation will begin and end with the sound of the chime. Breathing in, I am aware of my pain. Breathe out, I am aware that I am not my pain. Breathe in, I am aware of my past. Breathe out, I am aware that I am not my past. Breathe in, I am aware of my anger. Breathe out, I am aware that I am not defined by my anger. Breathe in, I am aware of my despair. Breathe out, I am aware that I am not my despair. Breathe in, I am aware of peace. Breathe out, I am aware that I am worthy of peace. Breathe in, I am aware of love. Breathe out, I am aware that I am worthy of love. Breathe in, I am aware of joy. Breathe out, I am aware that I can be an agent of joy. Breathe in, I am aware of hope. Breathe out, I am aware that I can bring hope. Breathe in, I am aware. Breathe out.
Our faith demands our service in promoting and creating communities of peace, love, and justice for all. Our faith calls us to practice our relational theology by respecting the worth of every person and the sacredness of every person's sexuality while honoring the wholeness of life in the interdependent web of existence of which we are a part. Our faith calls us to treat others with justice, equality, and compassion, while we work to create environments locally and globally that lend themselves to modeling liberty, peace, and justice in human interactions. Our faith calls us to act in ways that foster well-being in ourselves and others by doing no harm and acting responsibly to create communities and institutions that are safe and nonviolent. Finally, our faith calls us to be courageous and committed leaders in the ongoing search for truth and meaning, spiritual freedom, and ethical responsibility. Interpersonal violence is a form of dehumanization in our society perpetuated by those with power over others who use intimidation, coercion, threats, deceit, isolation, sexuality, and privilege to dominate and control. This violence is physical, emotional, sexual, social, economic, cultural, spiritual, and or political behavior used to harm, oppress, and control children, youth, women, and men. In Sexual Violence, The Unmentionable Sin, Marie Fortune writes that interpersonal violence is a symptom of social conditions that maintain the imbalance of power and societal privilege. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 168, One More Step.
Today's topic is one that it tends to make people a little nervous to do in church, because we don't like to talk about this as a country. But as changes come in our political climate and safety is not assured, this is important. This may not come as news to you, but church is supposed to be safe, right? You're supposed to be able to come here, and it's a safe space. No one's going to hurt you here. It's the place you go where someone has hurt you, and you come here, and you look for community, for support and comfort. It's a place to go and talk to a minister that you can trust to be there with you in that struggle. Every 98 seconds in America, an American person is sexually assaulted. How does that break down? That is 1 in 6 women and 1 in 33 men. So what does that mean in a room this size? It means we probably have 4 to 6 women and 1 to 2 men who are survivors sitting here in this room. That doesn't feel like a very comforting statistic. Being assaulted or coerced into sexualized behavior is bad enough, but over the past 40 years, religious communities of all type and stripe all across the country have been wounded by stories of clergy misconduct, places where church wasn't safe. With everything going on around us in the world, there has to be some place that you can go to know that nobody's going to harm you. But televangelists have been caught in all kinds of prostitution stings. The Catholic Church had their own problems with stories of child abuse. The Lutheran Church here in this area had male ministers sleeping with multiple congregants. And then there's us. And before we get too busy pointing our fingers and looking at everyone else, in the 90s, the gifted minister of All Souls was cheating on his wife with more than one congregant. The story got so big it hit the New York Times. Another minister from Massachusetts was convicted of rape. He served several years. The story was told on Oprah. California minister had so many affairs that a current affair ambushed him in the driveway. That was not one of our finest moments as a denomination. This isn't a Catholic or a Protestant mainline or a Jewish issue. This is our issue too. In the past, it was worse. In her article, Reforms Take Aim at Clergy Misconduct, Kim French says, in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't uncommon for ministers to have relationships with congregants, divorce their wives. French quotes Deborah Pope Lance's 2011 Berry Street address and says some preyed on parishioners engaging in multiple affairs. Some made inappropriate sexual remarks to women, what we now call sexual harassment. General Assembly in the 1970s could feel like Carnival or the Roman Bacchanal. Again, not our finest moment. In the same Berry Street address, Pope Lance said, as many as two-thirds of our congregations, two-thirds, let that sit for a minute, have been served in living memory by a minister known to have engaged in inappropriate conduct there or somewhere else. And Pope Lance says, at first I said that very timidly because I couldn't imagine our ministers would do that, but now I know they can and they have. So what's the good news? After 2010, after years of work, RUUA began to take strong steps toward giving congregations ways to be safe, because this matters. All candidates for UU ministry must now take a course in sexual ethics and boundaries and pass the course. You would think that wouldn't need to be said, but it did. In 2013, after years of argument and debate, the UU Ministers Association adopted a code of conduct with clear boundaries. Ministers agree not to have sexual conduct with anyone in the church they serve. No exceptions. Now, believe it or not, prior to this, there were multiple exceptions listed. And for those of you who think this is cut and dried, I was present in ministry days of 2011 when the proposal came on the board. There were shouts from the floor throughout the presentation, and at one point the ethics presenter was booed and hissed. This is not a dead issue. So we have clarified ministers can't have sexual contact with congregants. And we define that by the law of the state and roughly the same as the Methodists did in 2012 in their book of resolutions. Sexual misconduct in the church as described as a continuum of sexual or gender-related behaviors by either lay or clergy person within a ministerial relationship. And behaviors include all the things you'd think it would: child abuse, adult abuse, harassment, sexual assault, sexualized verbal comments or visuals, unwelcome touching or advance, use of sexualized materials, including pornography, stalking, abuse of the youth or those without capacity to consent, or misuse of pastoral or ministerial position, using sexualized conduct to take advantage of the vulnerability of another. And it's that vulnerability that matters. This is the reason why when we heard a politician say, I want to grab someone by part of their anatomy, that we winced. Because anyone with power grabbing someone who doesn't have power is a perpetrator. Healthy relationships are based on equality and respect. Abusive ones are based on power and control. And a sexual relationship with someone who, by the very nature of their job, is responsible for helping you to develop spiritually, it can't be healthy. In her article, Toward an Understanding and Faithful Response, Patricia Hertdorfer writes, our religious heritages, Unitarian, Universalist, and Unitarian Universalist, compel us to address the important, widespread, and complex social issues of abuse and interpersonal violence. Physical, emotional, sexual, spiritual abuse, sexual exploitation, partner abuse, child abuse, elder abuse, all profoundly affect all participants by diminishing human dignity and free choice. In our religious communities, breaches of trust, faith, and safety in our congregations undermine the foundations of our personal and communal covenants. Why is this important? It's important because if the world begins to ignore this, we have to pay attention. We have to understand that a power disparate relationship can be dangerous and that it's not right. This is so important that Reverend Gail Seavey made it the topic of her 2016 Berry Street lecture at the beginning of this past year's General Assembly. Elaine McCardle writes, Seavey gave us a historical context of clergy misconduct in UU congregations, including the reluctance of UU ministers to criticize their colleagues. Some who did criticize, she noted, were censured by the UUA. Estimating that one-third to one-half of the UU congregations have been affected by clergy misconduct within recent memory, Seavey described the psychological trauma to individuals and the severe damage to congregational health, and noted that the problem isn't limited to male ministers. Facing the issue head-on rather than concealing it is not only the moral thing to do, but results in healthier congregations and a healthier denomination. I was there for that lecture, and the energy in the room was unbelievable. And it's available online, and it's available in video, and I suggest you take a minute to look at it. Gail Seavey is the senior minister at First UU Nashville, a church that had a terrible history of ministerial misconduct before her. And she has led them to develop a program called UU Safety Net, which looks to affect change in policy and procedure around clergy sexual abuse in our whole denomination. So she took a church that had been hurt and built something to keep us all safe. And at the end of Gail Seavey's lecture, she got a standing ovation. And a bunch of female-identified clergy circled the stage because it was the first time somebody had said these things out loud, that it wasn't right. It wasn't right for male ministers to pick on female ministers. It wasn't right for anybody to abuse congregants. We are a people of covenant, and it's a covenant that allows us to worship here together. And covenant requires you to be held safe. And in a congregation like this, where community is so valuable, some of the requirements for upholding that covenant can seem almost silly. It can be very hard to understand why you can't call me and say, hey, let's go to a concert. But that slope isn't just slippery. It's an iced, greased track where every path pretty much leads down. I hold in my heart memories of ministers so careful about those boundaries they won't even go to coffee hour. Church has to be safe, and the shepherds can't ever be allowed to become wolves. Because part of the responsibility of my office is to help model healthy relationships. And the continuum of behaviors called sexual misconduct within the ministerial relationship represents an exploitation of power. not merely inappropriate sexual or gender conduct. The distinction's important because the church may be a little part of your world, but dealing with people who have power over you is a daily occurrence. So remember those stats I gave you earlier. 1 in 6 women, 1 in 33 men. It is my job, it is my sacred task to strengthen you in all ways, so if you are confronted or hurt or opportuned in that greater world by someone who has power over you, if they make inappropriate sexual demands or requests of you, if you are assaulted, you have support here. It is my job as a minister to teach what a healthy, safe, power dynamic relationship looks like, so that you will be able to recognize an unhealthy relationship with a teacher or a doctor or a minister or a therapist or anyone else for exactly what it is. It is my job to tell you that you can speak strongly. You can say no clearly. It is my job to help you to recognize that you bear no shame and you carry no fault if your no is or was ignored. It is my honor to tell you that you did nothing wrong. It's my privilege to say to you that you do not owe your body or your soul to anyone, and that the right to control yourself is something you should treasure. You will always have at least one person who understands that only you should have total control over your body and your mind, your spirituality and your sexuality. And no one should force you to deed that control to anyone else. It is the minister's job to be that shepherd. And if they ever grow fur and fangs and start looking a little woolly, it's your job to throw that UU safety net over them until they can be put in a cage and made harmless. Amen.
We send this light into the world to shine a glow of truth and love on every place where light grows dim. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 136, Where Gentle Tides Go Rolling By.
Yeah.
Be stronger than you imagined, braver than you dreamed possible, and more capable of compassion than you ever knew. Peace, and may it be so.
Thank you.